From the Lynn to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 10th day of August, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes at Total Farm Marketing, discuss the cash grain situation with Greg Johnson of TGM, and hear all about the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated. And it all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It's public radio for the farming world online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Corn futures for the day finished at 621 and a quarter, up 5 3/4. December at 618 and a half, up 4 1/2 cents. In the March at 625 and 3/4, 4 1/4 higher. September soybeans down 3 1/4, finished at $15.09. November at 1427 and 3/4 for the new crop, a penny lower for the day. And January soybeans at 1433 and 3/4, down 3/4 of a cent. Bean meal futures up 50 cents at 449.60. The bean oil $1.62 higher at $67.38. Soft red winter wheat, $7.99 3/4, up 18 1/4, and the hard red at $8.72 3/4. Both of those for the September contract, up 21 cents on the afternoon. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the lead at 144.47 1/2, $1.30 higher. Feeders at $185, up $2.50, and lean hogs at $100.85, up $1.25 per 100 pounds. Crude oil, $91.99 a barrel, up $1.48 today. The diesel fuel about 7 cents higher, $3.40 4/10 of a cent. And gasoline at $3.06 7/10, finished a dime and 7 tenths of a cent higher. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Jackie Vakes at TotalFarmMarketing.com now joins us to take a look at what's been happening in Chicago. Hi, Jackie. Thank you for being with us. Each week we start with the support and resistance levels. I think that'll be a good place to start again this week. Tell me about them.
Sounds good. On corn, September 623, 648, December 608 and 667, March 621 and 689, all three are higher than they were last week. Beans, September 1441 and 1599, November 1426 and 1487, January 1422 and 1587. For December, gold 1789 to 1847, Dow Jones 32,757 to 36,952, U.S. dollar 102.97 to 106.47. You know, Todd, when we look at managed money every week, this always kind of gives us a feel for what's going on. Managed money right now is short 21,000 on the soft red wheat compared to 34,000 last week. Long 147,000 corn compared to 115 last week. Long 103,000 beans compared to 83,000 last week. Long 74,000 soy meal compared to 78 last week, and long 24,000 compared to 11,000 soy oil last week. So they flipped last week. You know, all the numbers went down on the wheat, the corn, the beans, and the oil, and went up on meal. This week, it's just the absolute opposite of that. The index traders who are hedging inflation, you know, we talked a little bit last week that they're likely to stay out of the market big time unless something changes on this August report on Friday until September. But they actually did add a very small amount, 1,837 contracts to corn, 5,700 to beans, and 4,900 to wheat this week. And so they're doing a little bit, but not an awful lot. Export inspections. Wheat exports were down 11% compared to 12% last week. Corn 18 compared to 18 last week, and soybeans 7% compared to 8% last week.
Coming up Friday, USDA will release the first crop production report for the year for corn and soybeans. Of course, the WASD numbers will be updated along with the acreage figures should they find something different and unique in parts of those areas that they have resurveyed. What numbers will you be watching, and what has it meant or will it mean to the market action, do you suppose?
Well, I think that when the big key is going to be corn and bean yield. Those are the numbers that you're going to hone in on right away on what production actually is. And so the expectation is that corn yield will go to 175.8 and bean yield to 51. You know, yesterday we had the digital information that came out showing much tighter numbers even than that, but don't expect that on this report. That this report is going to be based on what they have. The wild card in this one, Todd, is what happened in Minnesota, South Dakota, North Dakota when they resurveyed. And in that respect, if we lost a bunch of acres, you know, either went prevent plant, you could actually see the yield get higher, but your production number go down. And so it's going to be very interesting. Everybody will be sitting on top of this. And when you look at the last year, okay, well, look at the last 6 out of 7 years, USDA corn production was higher than the average trade guess. Last year, it came in 250 million bushels below trade guess. And that's for corn. On soy, 5 of the last 7 years, they were above the trade guess. And last year, they came in 40 bushels below the expectation. And yet, if you looked at the August to the final yields, by the end of the year, it was up 2.4 bushels from the August report on corn and 1.4 bushels on beans. And so, you know, everybody knows that. And so they're expecting about a 1.5 billion bushel carryout on corn. One of the big things, the EIA ethanol today should help. We actually used 20 million bushels more than we needed to reach the USDA numbers last week. So we saw production down just slightly. Stocks were down in a decent amount. And so I think that is going to be supportive. That's one of the big concerns that everybody has is what's going to happen with ethanol. And things we're looking at 228 million bushel carryout compared to 215 last month. You know, everybody's looking at a little softer demand coming out of China like it had for next year, 1.3. 8.3 is the average guess. That's almost 100 million bushels lower than we were in July for corn. And, you know, we'll see. On soybeans, 230 compared to 227. And wheat, a little higher for next year, 651 compared to 639 in July. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. I think one of the things we know is a question is, will the WASDE EU crops? You know, because the EU crops have definitely been going down in size. And so that's another thing that we'll be looking at, as well as, you know, where Brazil and Argentina are. That's, you know, the weather for the next 5 days, Todd, is supportive. It's dry. There's no question about that. And we're behind on the crop. Every time you look at condition ratings, we can see that. So one of the things that supported us today is just China came in and bought corn and beans. It's almost like they read the digital thing and said, whoa, you know, if this is true, prices are not going to stay where they are. But today was a really odd day because we, you know, we traded a lot higher and, you know, then we're moving down. And so I attribute a bunch of that to positioning ahead of Friday's report. And if you look at the Ukrainian grain exports, I thought this was pretty good. They're down 52% year on year. They've shipped 2.2 million tons so far for this season. So that supports things. Let's just put it that way. Doesn't mean it's going to go through the roof, but it is supportive.
You've mentioned the digital release. That's the grow numbers that DTN put out. And those are updated each day of the year. So they're slightly different now than they were on Monday when they were released. But they were at 167.2 bushels the acre then. USDA, of course, at what, 177 at the moment. 48.9 USDA at 51.5 at the moment. I'm wondering, when you got the numbers from Dr. Cordonnier, based on the weekly crop progress reports, and you looked at the trend line yields, what did they tell us about the movement of the yields this year?
Well, as far as for this week compared to last week, corn stayed the same, 24.3% below trend line, 22.5% at trend line, and 43.9% above trend line. And so there's a question mark right now as to whether Pennsylvania, South Dakota, Michigan will stay above trend line. But for right now, they are. The one that shocked me was soybean. It had 8.9% below trend line. This week, it was 20.8%. And we had 54.4% at trend line. This week, 42.5%. And above trend line, the same state stayed there, 31.6%. So everything that moved from at trend line to below trend line in just 1 week's time. And so it's going to be interesting to see what next week brings. But to me, that certainly says that, you know, August is bean month. There's no question about that. That there's been some pretty tough times on the beans out there.
Hey, thanks, Jackie, for taking the time with us today, and you have a good one.
You too. Have a great day.
Jackie Vakes is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Wednesday afternoon. You can always visit our website and listen to the Closing Market Report, the other programming, anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. Just click and play from the website or search us out in your favorite podcast applications, places like Google, Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, and many, many more. Even Audible, if you are a user of that service, the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week or podcast that you can listen to each and every time they're released. Let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, I'd like to specifically talk about dry areas in the growing regions across the planet. Can we begin out west? And I think I want to divide this into several spaces. So I'm maybe North Dakota to the north. However, South Dakota, Kansas, and Nebraska lay out, if that's together or apart. And then, of course, Oklahoma, Texas, those kinds of things. And then we'll figure out some other places to go. But are there regional differences in the Western Corn Belt?
Well, there are definitely some differences. You know, in the Corn Belt proper, you know, we got that good rain this past weekend in eastern South Dakota into southern Minnesota and northern Iowa and on over into Wisconsin and Illinois. What a huge difference that event made. But, you know, everybody else to the west and to the south really didn't get included in that. And so today, from North Dakota and areas points northward and northwestward, actually into the heart of the Canadian prairies and back to the west into Montana, we are running very short on topsoil moisture and short to very short in the subsoil. So the ground has firmed up a lot. Now, for some of these early season crops, you know, it's not a bad deal, but late season crop development certainly needs to have some rain sometime in the near future. And it's not exactly looking real promising, but with that said, we're going to see an enhancement in the U.S. southwest monsoon flow. That's the flow pattern that brings moisture, subtropical moisture from Mexico northward through the southwestern desert areas and then up through the Rocky Mountains. And this is going to become a strong enough feed of moisture that we'll actually get a few showers and thunderstorms to pop up in eastern Montana and North Dakota into Canada's prairies as we go forward through the coming week. Is it enough to fix the moisture deficit? Probably not, but it'll be fun to watch a few showers go through there and at least take some of the edge of stress off. Now, you mentioned Nebraska, Kansas, points southward and southwestward, you know, all the way back into Missouri and southwestern Iowa. You know, the rain event last weekend did not bring rain into western and southern parts of Iowa, at least not of significance. And the same is true for a big part of Missouri, which had rain earlier in that same week. And then Kansas has just been bone up dry for a long time now. So there is a big need for moisture in all of those areas. Southwest half of Iowa and Missouri are catching up real quickly with the dryness. Crop moisture stress is on the rise. And then Nebraska and Kansas in unirrigated areas are really toughening out right now.
Let's stay in the United States before we get to some of the other dry areas across the planet. The Eastern Corn Belt, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Minnesota, what do they look like?
You know, as I mentioned, in Iowa, we have quite a contrast there from northeast to southwest. So the northeast part of the state is really in pretty good shape. Now, there's still a moisture deficit down a little bit in the ground, but I think most of those crops are really doing all right if they can get some timely rain to continue to come and go. Illinois is probably in the best out of all of those states you just listed. It has just about ideal moisture profile in many areas. There are a couple of pockets of exception. You go further east, and those exceptions become a little bit more common in parts of Indiana and Ohio. But none of those areas, including Michigan, are anywhere close to being as dry as those areas out in the western fringes of the Corn Belt. And the prospects for them to finish out this growing season relatively well are really good. So I think that the crops on the east side of the Mississippi are still looking just really good. And we'll have to throw in the northeast part of Iowa with that, too. But areas off to the west is still questionable. And we still have some issues down across the Delta, too. They're a little dry.
But speaking of the dry, what are other areas that are dry across the planet look like today?
You know, it's amazing to me. It's a very classic La Nina signature for a multiple-year La Nina event. You know, La Ninas take out moisture out of the mid-latitudes. And the longer La Nina prevails, the drier the mid-latitudes become, both in the northern and southern hemisphere. Well, we saw the problems in Brazil and Argentina during their growing season. Now, of course, a big part of Europe is quite dry. Both the west and the southeast part of Europe really are too dry, and they're going to have some lower yields because of that. Now we're also seeing a big insurgence of dryness and heat in Russia's southern region and immediate neighboring areas of East Ukraine and the middle Volga River Valley. Now, these areas are going to be subjected to a Sokovy, which is a strong east-northeast wind that blows across the Russian steppes and causes temperatures to go up into the 90s and over 100 degrees with very low humidity and no precipitation. And that's going to be ongoing for the next 10 days. Then there's China. Believe it or not, that China has, it's one place that's been really excessively wet for the last few years, but they're finally drying out in their Yangtze River Basin, which is kind of the east central and southeast part of the country. And they are in the midst of a 2-week hot, dry pattern. Temperatures are getting into the 95 to 108 degree range every day, and that will continue for at least 7 to 10 more days. And so needless to say, the ground is getting fairly dry there. They still have good subsoil moisture, so it's not a crisis yet. Those are the dry areas. Now we've got India, which is excessively wet in some areas across the central part of the country there. And they're going to continue that way for a while. And then taking a real quick look at Australia, they are in tip-top shape. One of the best pre-spring season moisture profiles I've seen in that country for a very long time. Now, as long as it doesn't get too wet later in the spring, they're going to do just fine.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Let's talk a little bit about the cash grain market on this Wednesday. Greg Johnson is here from TGM, TotalGrainMarketing.com, out of Champaign, Illinois. Thanks, Greg, for being with us. What's the lay of the land look like for you today?
It's been a very quiet, uneventful week. I think the traders are looking ahead to the report on Friday from the USDA. And in the meantime, the markets are higher. On the one hand, the weather forecast for east of the Mississippi River, the eastern Corn Belt, looks pretty good. On the other hand, it looks pretty hot and dry for those west of the Mississippi River. So that seems to be winning out in the marketplace today. But farmers have been sellers of beans on this rally. We're back up over $14 for cash beans. The futures market's over 14 and a half. So we are seeing a little bit of farmer interest in selling new crop beans, but still not interested in selling any new crop corn at these levels for a couple of reasons. Probably one, I think there was probably a little bit more damage done to the corn with that hot, dry weather in June and July than what was done with the beans. And the other thing is, I think farmers are just not sure how much the price hasn't rebounded enough yet on corn compared to the bean rebound. So I think that's another reason why the farmers are a little bit more tight holders of corn than they are beans right now. So been a very quiet week for corn sales as far as that's concerned.
I have some questions about cash basis and corn and beans both. So soybeans on the farm clearly are not worth as much today as they have been in the past. I'm wondering whether this kind of spread tells you that either the new crop has to come up dramatically or whether the old crop will see a dramatic drop as we start to get new crop soybeans into the southern part of the United States.
Yeah, typically, you see a little bit of both. As old crop prices and new crop come together, you'll see the old crop basis drop and the new crop basis maybe improve a little bit, especially for some quick shipment type premiums in September. But once we get to the 1st of October, typically then that premium, that quick shipment premium, goes away. So for anybody that still has old crop beans, that $1.20 over is probably going to just continue to get worse. Every week it'll be 5 or 10 or 15 cents lower until we get to the fall price. So for the next 4 or 5 weeks, they'll, I think we've seen it in the last 3 or 4 weeks already. We just keep losing a little bit of old crop basis premium every week. And I think that is going to continue to happen. As far as corn is concerned, September is a more actively traded month. So processors, end users, feeders still are bidding off of the September for old crop corn and December for the new crop. But for beans, the August and the September, there's just not a lot of volume in those months. So historically, once we get off the July, most of the end users know to bid off the November. And if they have to pay $1.50 over, they pay $1.50 over to reflect what they really can pay for cash beans. So I think the August and September are very thinly traded months. And so November is the lead month, as you can see by volume on the Board of Trade. That's what the end users are using for both old crop and new crop bids for beans.
So concentrating on new crop for both corn and soybeans, is demand there at this point to maintain higher prices, given what is likely to be a pretty good bean crop, I suppose, in the United States, and an okay corn crop in the U.S. We'll know more Friday from the United States Department of Agriculture.
Yes, the bean demand has been good. There are rumblings and rumors that China is interested in buying beans from the United States during the fall. They did last year, and we saw some really good soybean basis levels. We saw some quick shipment premiums. I guess I anticipate that happening again, as long as we don't upset the apple cart and drive China away from buying beans from the U.S. So, yeah, it kind of feels like there is demand for soybeans. As far as corn is concerned, it's just kind of there. It's not overwhelming demand. It's not terrible. It's just kind of stuck in the middle. The ethanol use is so-so. The exports are so-so. Feed usage is so-so. So it's not bad, but it's not good. Whereas soybean demand, I think, is much, much better than normal.
You expect prices for futures to climb?
I think it all depends on the weather. I don't know that the report's going to tell us a whole lot. It's still not based off of actual field surveys. It's still based off of some kind of a trend yield adjusted for the good condition, good to excellent condition rating. So, maybe the quarterly stocks number might have an impact, but I think more importantly is just the weather. And right now, the weather looks hot and dry, at least last I heard, in the Western Corn Belt, hot and dry for anything west of the Mississippi for not only this week, but next week. Whereas east of the Mississippi, not only have we already received rain, but we've got chances of rain and not as hot a temperature. So, if you were trading the Eastern Corn Belt, the market should be lower. But I think we're trading the Western Corn Belt because there's some very big states out there. And that's why we've been higher this week.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
And it's Greg Johnson. He is with TGM Total Grain Marketing. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. Just click and play from the website at willag.org or look us up in your favorite podcast applications. Places like Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Amazon Music, Spotify, and Audible. Many, many more. The Closing Market Report theme music is produced, edited, and performed by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.